Chapter 6. In this manner I conversed with Monsieur Maillard for an hour or two, during which he showed me the gardens and conservatories of the place. "I cannot let you see my patients," he said, "just at present. To a sensitive mind there is always more or less of the shocking in such exhibitions, and I do not wish to spoil your appetite for dinner. We will dine. I can give you some vile la menehould, with cauliflowers and velout sauce after, that a glass of closed avoujiet, then your nerves will be sufficiently steadied." At 6, dinner was announced, and my host conducted me into a large salle manger, where a very numerous company were assembled, 25 or 30 in all. They were, apparently, people of rank, certainly of high breeding, although their habiliments, I thought, were extravagantly rich, partaking somewhat too much of the ostentatious finery of the veal cour. I noticed that at least 2/3 of these guests were ladies, and some of the latter were by no means accoutred in what a Parisian would consider good taste at the present day. Many females, for example, whose age could not have been less than 70, were bedecked with a profusion of jewelry, such as rings, bracelets, and earrings, and wore their bosoms and arms shamefully bare. I observed, too, that very few of the dresses were well made, or, at least, that very few of them fitted the wearers. In looking about, I discovered the interesting girl to whom Monsieur Maillard had presented me in the little parlor. But my surprise was great to see her wearing a hoop and farthingale, with high-heeled shoes, and a dirty cap of Brussels lace, so much too large for her, that it gave her face a ridiculously diminutive expression. When I had first seen her, she was attired, most becomingly, in deep mourning. There was an air of oddity, in short, about the dress of the whole party, which, at first, caused me to recur to my original idea of the oothing system, and to fancy that Monsieur Maillard had been willing to deceive me until after dinner, that I might experience no uncomfortable feelings during the repast, at finding myself dining with lunatics. But I remembered having been informed, in Paris, that the southern provincialists were a peculiarly eccentric people, with a vast number of antiquated notions. And then too, upon conversing with several members of the company, my apprehensions were immediately and fully dispelled. The dining room itself, although perhaps sufficiently comfortable, and of good dimensions, had nothing too much of elegance about it. For example, the floor was uncarpeted. In France, however, a carpet is frequently dispensed with. The windows too, were without curtains. The shutters, being shut, were securely fastened with iron bars, applied diagonally, after the fashion of our ordinary shop shutters. The apartment, I observed, formed, in itself, a wing of the chateau, and thus the windows were on three sides of the parallelogram, the door being at the other. There were no less than 10 windows in all. The table was superbly set out. It was loaded with plate, and more than loaded with delicacies. The profusion was absolutely barbaric. There were meats enough to have feasted the Anakim. Never, in all my life, had I witnessed so lavish, so wasteful an expenditure of the good things of life. There seemed very little taste, however, in the arrangements, and my eyes, accustomed to quiet lights, were sadly offended by the prodigious glare of a multitude of wax candles, which, in silver candelabra, were deposited upon the table, and all about the room, wherever it was possible to find a place. There were several active servants in attendance, and, upon a large table, at the farther end of the apartment, were seated 7 or 8 people with fiddles, fifes, trombones, and a drum. These fellows annoyed me very much, at intervals, during the repast, by an infinite variety of noises, which were intended for music, and which appeared to afford much entertainment to all present, with the exception of myself. Upon the whole, I could not help thinking that there was much of the bizarre about everything I saw, but then the world is made up of all kinds of persons, with all modes of thought, and all sorts of conventional customs. I had traveled, too, so much, as to be quite an adept at the nil admirari, So I took my seat very coolly at the right hand of my host, and, having an excellent appetite, did justice to the good cheer set before me. The conversation, in the meantime, was spirited and general. The ladies, as usual, talked a great deal. I soon found that nearly all the company were well educated, and my host was a world of good-humored anecdote in himself. He seemed quite willing to speak of his position as superintendent of a Maison de Sant, and, indeed, the topic of lunacy was, much to my surprise, a favorite one with all present. A great many amusing stories were told, having reference to the whims of the patients. "We had a fellow here once," said a fat little gentleman, who sat at my right, "fellow that fancied himself a teapot. And by the way, is it not especially singular, how often this particular crotchet has entered the brain of the lunatic? There is scarcely an insane asylum in France which cannot supply a human teapot." Our gentleman was a Britannia ware teapot, and was careful to polish himself every morning with buckskin and whiting. "And then," said a tall man just opposite, "we had here, not long ago, a person who had taken it into his head that he was a donkey, which, allegorically speaking, you will say, was quite true. He was a troublesome patient, and we had much ado to keep him within bounds. For a long time he would eat nothing but thistles, but of this idea we soon cured him by insisting upon his eating nothing else. Then he was perpetually kicking out his heels so, Mr. de Kock, I will thank you to behave yourself," here interrupted an old lady, who sat next to the speaker. "Please keep your feet to yourself. You have spoiled my brocade. Is it necessary, pray, to illustrate a remark in so practical a style? Our friend here can surely comprehend you without all this. Upon my word, you are nearly as great a donkey as the poor unfortunate imagined himself. Your acting is very natural, as I live." "Mille pardons, mamselle," replied Monsieur de Kock, thus addressed, "thousand pardons. I had no intention of offending. Mamselle Laplace, Monsieur de Kock will do himself the honor of taking wine with you." Here Monsieur de Kock bowed low, kissed his hand with much ceremony, and took wine with Mamselle Laplace. "Allow me, mon ami," now said Monsieur Maillard, addressing myself, "allow me to send you a morsel of this Ville la Saint Mental. You will find it particularly fine." At this instant, three sturdy waiters had just succeeded in depositing safely upon the table an enormous dish, or trencher, containing what I supposed to be the Anstrom Horrendum, Infirm, Ingens, Cubic Illumin Ademptum. A closer scrutiny assured me, however, that it was only a small calf roasted whole, and set upon its knees, with an apple in its mouth, as is the English fashion of dressing a hare. "Thank you, no," I replied. "To say the truth, I am not particularly partial to Ville la Saint. What is it? For I do not find that it altogether agrees with me. I will change my plate, however, and try some of the rabbit." There were several side dishes on the table, containing what appeared to be the ordinary French rabbit, a very delicious morceau, which I can recommend. "Pierre," cried the host, "change this gentleman's plate, and give him a side piece of this rabbit au chat." "This what?" said I, "this rabbit au chat? Why, thank you upon second thoughts, no. I will just help myself to some of the ham. There is no knowing what one eats," thought I to myself, "at the tables of these people of the province. I will have none of their rabbit au chat, and, for the matter of that, none of their cat au rabbit either." "And then," said a cadaverous-looking personage, near the foot of the table, taking up the thread of the conversation, where it had been broken off, "and then, among other oddities, we had a patient, once upon a time, who very pertinaciously maintained himself to be a Cordova cheese, and went about, with a knife in his hand, soliciting his friends to try a small slice from the middle of his leg. He was a great fool, beyond doubt," interposed someone, "but not to be compared with a certain individual whom we all know, with the exception of this strange gentleman. I mean the man who took himself for a bottle of champagne, and always went off with a pop and a fizz, in this fashion. Here the speaker, very rudely, as I thought, put his right thumb in his left cheek, withdrew it with a sound resembling the popping of a cork, and then, by a dexterous movement of the tongue upon the teeth, created a sharp hissing and fizzing, which lasted for several minutes, in imitation of the frothing of champagne. This behavior, I saw plainly, was not very pleasing to Monsieur Maillard. But that gentleman said nothing, and the conversation was resumed by a very lean little man in a big wig. And then there was an ignoramus, said he, who mistook himself for a frog, which, by the way, he resembled in no little degree. I wish you could have seen him, sir, here the speaker addressed myself, he would have done your heart good to see the natural airs that he put on. Sir, if that man was not a frog, I can only observe that it is a pity he was not. His croak thus O-O-O-O-G-H-O-O-O-O-G-H was the finest note in the world B-flat, and when he put his elbows upon the table thus, after taking a glass or two of wine, and distended his mouth, thus, and rolled up his eyes, thus, and winked them with excessive rapidity, thus, why then, sir, I take it upon myself to say, positively, that he would have been lost in admiration of the genius of the man. I have no doubt of it, I said. And then, said somebody else, then there was Petit Gaillard, who thought himself a pinch of snuff, and was truly distressed, because he could not take himself between his own finger and thumb. And then there was Jules de Zaliers, who was a very singular genius, indeed, and went mad with the idea that he was a pumpkin. He persecuted the cook, to make him up in two pies, a thing which the cook indignantly refused to do. For my part, I am by no means sure that a pumpkin pie a la de Zaliers would not have been very capital eating indeed. You astonish me, said I, and I looked inquisitively at Monsieur Maillard. Ha, 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 said that gentleman, he, hi, hi, ho, who, very good indeed. You must not be astonished, mon ami, our friend here is a wit a droll, you must not understand him to the letter. And then, said some other one of the party, and there was Baufin Legrand, another extraordinary personage in his way. He grew deranged through love, and fancied himself possessed of two heads. One of these he maintained to be the head of Cicero, the other he imagined a composite one, being Demosthenes from the top of the forehead to the mouth, and Lord Brougham's from the mouth to the chin. It is not impossible that he was wrong, but he would have convinced you of his being in the right, for he was a man of great eloquence. He had an absolute passion for oratory, and could not refrain from display. For example, he used to leap upon the dinner table thus, and hear a friend, at the sight of the speaker, put a hand upon his shoulder, and whispered a few words in his ear, upon which he ceased talking with great suddenness, and sank back within his chair. And then, said the friend who had whispered, there was Ballard, the teetotum. I call him the teetotum because, in fact, he was seized with the droll, but not altogether irrational crotchet, that he had been converted into a teetotum. He would have roared with laughter to see him spin. He would turn round upon one heel by the hour, in this manner so, here the friend whom he had just interrupted by a whisper, performed an exactly similar office for himself. But then, cried the old lady, at the top of her voice, your Monsieur Ballard was a madman, and a very silly madman at best, for who, allow me to ask you, ever heard of a human teetotum? The thing is absurd. Madame Joyeuse was a more sensible person, as you know. Yes, he had a crotchet, but it was instinct with common sense, and gave pleasure to all who had the honor of her acquaintance. She found, upon mature deliberation, that, by some accident, as he had been turned into a chicken cock, but, as such, she behaved with propriety. She flapped her wings with prodigious effect so-so, and, as for her crow, it was delicious. Cock-a-doodle-doo. Cock a doodle doo. Cock a doodle da doo doo oh doo oh 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 oh. Madam Joyeuse, I will thank you to behave yourself. Here interrupted our host, very angrily. Why, you can either conduct yourself as a lady should do, or you can quit the table forthwith, take your choice. The lady, whom I was much astonished to hear addressed as Madam Joyeuse, after the description of Madam Joyeuse as he had just given, blushed up to the eyebrows, and seemed exceedingly abashed at the reproof. She hung down her head, and said not a syllable in reply. But another and younger lady resumed the theme. It was my beautiful girl of the little parlor. Oh, Madam Joyeuse was a fool, she exclaimed, but there was really much sound sense, after all, in the opinion of Eugenie Salsafette. She was a very beautiful and painfully modest young lady, who thought the ordinary mode of habiliment indecent, and wished to dress herself, always, by getting outside instead of inside of her clothes. It is a thing very easily done, after all. You have only to do so, and then so-so-so, and then so-so-so, and then so-so, and then, mon dieu, Mamselle Salsafette. Here cried a dozen voices at once. What are you about? Forbear. That is sufficient. We see, very plainly, how it is done. Hold. Hold. And several persons were already leaping from their seats, to withhold Mamselle Salsafette from putting herself upon a par with the Medician Venus, when the point was very effectually and suddenly accomplished by a series of loud screams, or yells, from some portion of the main body of the chateau. My nerves were very much affected, indeed, by these yells, but the rest of the company I really pitied. I never saw any set of reasonable people so thoroughly frightened in my life. They all grew as pale as so many corpses, and, shrinking within their seats, sat quivering and gibbering with terror, and listening for a repetition of the sound. It came again louder, and seemingly nearer, and then a third time very loud, and then a fourth time with a vigor evidently diminished. At this apparent dying away of the noise, the spirits of the company were immediately regained, and all was life and anecdote as before. I now ventured to inquire the cause of the disturbance. A mere bagatelle, said Monsieur Maillard. We are used to these things, and care really very little about them. The lunatics, every now and then, get up a howl in concert, one starting another, as is sometimes the case with a bevy of dogs at night. It occasionally happens, however, that the concerto yells are succeeded by a simultaneous effort at breaking loose, when, of course, some little danger is to be apprehended. And how many have you in charge? At present we have not more than 10, altogether. Principally females, I presume? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.